Blog Talk Radio.
I'm your host, as always, Jamie. Tonight's guest, Lloyd Pye, is head researcher of the Star Child Skull, which is a unique skull over 900 years old. It was found in a Mexican cave in the 1930s after a flood. The Star Child Project was started as an informal organization, which began in 1999 when Ray and Melanie Young, the owners of the Star Child Skull, asked Lloyd Pye to head research efforts to determine what caused the unusual shape of the skull. The results uncovered by Pye's teams ruled out all known deformities. So I've pored over the website here, which is the starchildproject.com, and some very interesting information that we're going to talk about. So without further ado, let's introduce him, see if he's here. Lloyd, are you live? Are you here?
Yes, I am.
Nice to meet you, and nice to have you on Florida UFOs.
Well, thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Now, I'd like to start out the show with just a quick background of your upcoming, like, your education and how you got interested in this field.
Well, my education is basically I have a B.S., in psychology from Tulane University in New Orleans, and there are no degrees given for what I study, so I've had to just sort of pick it out of books and other information that's available as you work your way through and you find a subject like this that you want to delve into that is not accepted by mainstream science. It's not really forbidden knowledge, but it is hidden, and you do have to work quite a long time at becoming proficient and knowledgeable about it.
Yeah, kind of like myself, as a ufology researcher, it's not recognized.
Right, there are no degrees in ufology,
no,
exactly.
No, you can research it for years and years and years, but when did you first hear about the skull?
The Star Child Skull, it was
in
the fall of 1998 when the couple in El Paso that had it contacted me, and they asked me if I was going to be coming to El Paso to that general area anytime soon, and I said toward the middle of February I would be going that way because I knew that I had a speaking engagement out there. So they said, would you please come by here? We have something we'd like to show you. And I said, sure. So that's how it worked out. I went to El Paso. They showed me the skulls. We talked it over. I agreed with them that the one that became the Star Child was highly unusual and merited serious research to determine what it was. And, you know, here I am 10.5 years later.
Now, they're still the owners, right, Ray and Melanie?
Right. Ray and Melanie Young are still the owners, and they still keep the originals of the skulls, you know, under lock and key and safe. And, you know,
and have duplicates. Do they have duplicates of it? Yeah.
I have the copies, the stereolithographic copies with me.
Now, did you appear on the UFO Hunters episodes where they studied this Star Child skull?
Yes, I did. Last year, in the fall of last year, I was I'd been on some other shows. I'd been on the Learning Channel. I'd been on the National Geographic Channel with it, and some others. But the most recent one was indeed the UFO Hunters last season.
Just to let our listeners know, UFO Hunters Season 3 is finishing October 29th. They're going to finish season 3, and if good ratings, they're going to continue with a season 4. Okay, now, I've been poring over the facts on the Star Child skull. Let's go through some questions here. Why do you think the reason why the skull is so much more porous than a normal skull? I know it's a fact, but what advantage would it give the owner of the skull? You know what I mean? Like,
It's really not porous. It's not more porous at all. In fact, its bone chemistry is different, but it's much more durable, actually, and it's much more, it's like compressed almost. It has, the biochemistry of tooth enamel rather than bone itself. So it's lighter, but that doesn't mean that it's porous. It's thinner, you see. It's half as thick as it ought to be, and it weighs half as much, but it's two or three times as hard. So one of the analogies that I draw is this. It's as if it started out the size, the thickness of normal human bone, and somehow a compression program was run on it to reduce it to half the size and half the weight, but all of the collagen that was in it originally stayed in it. And so that makes it much harder. One of the two things that make it much harder, the other being fibers of some unknown nature woven through the matrix of the bone, and we don't really know much about those fibers except that they exist and they're very durable.
Yeah, one thing I was wondering was if... when the owner of the skull was alive, if maybe the gravity was stronger, maybe that could be a reason why the structure is stronger and more.
That
more
could certainly be a part of it, but it's hard to imagine a gravity that would require bone of that strength. It might be maybe something to do with the stresses that occur in space travel. That might have something to do with it. You see what I mean? The high G forces. In order to, we've all heard the stories about how spacecraft go from just zero to, 10,000 miles an hour in just no time, just poof, gone. That's a lot of G forces in anybody's ball game. So maybe. It's required for that kind of speed and travel, but who knows? That would imply that is not really necessarily a human thing or a human type thing, a being type thing, but more robotic. And I don't believe that. I think this was a living being. So, but what it does suggest, perhaps, is that whatever the Star Child has in its biochemistry and its genetics that make it the way it is. Is something that could be teased out with enough study, and perhaps applied to our own bone structure over time, in the future, and add a lot of extra resilience to human bones, and that would be a very good thing.
So, is it believed the owner of the skull died at a young age?
No, it doesn't. At first, we thought that. Frankly, we made a mistake. The guy who took the X-rays, the first X-rays of it, which was the first thing we had done, you have it X-rayed, and he found that in the piece of maxilla, detached maxilla that was with it, he found it had two teeth down and it had a full complement of teeth up in, buried in the maxilla, the upper maxilla, ready to come down, and he just made the assumption that it was a child. He said, you have two teeth down, you have all these teeth up here, it's got to be a child. So we called it the Star Child, when later examination showed that the teeth were very worn, the roots were very big, all of which are not like children, and the bones themselves were well knit, and it isn't a child. We don't know how old it was when it died, but it was a full blown adult. It was not a child.
Now, have you studied at all or heard about the other strange skull? I think it was in Asia that they found that they proved was some kind of deformity.
There are a lot of strange deformed skulls, so I don't know really which one you're referring to.
Yeah, it's okay. I know a lot of people, you know, at first kind of had a controversy saying that the Star Child skull was, in fact, just a deformity and that people
right.
were wasting our time. But can
right,
you explain
exactly.
how it's been proven that it's not a deformity?
Yeah, you know, naturally critics and skeptics say that, and then because some expert has said it, it just becomes, in their minds, fact. Oh, well, an expert said that it's a deformity or it's a cradle-boarded hydrocephalic or whatever, and therefore that must mean what it is because that person's an expert, and it can't be anything but that anyway, so why are you even bothering? You know, they take that kind of attitude. But, yeah, we've had a number of experts go over it who have actually studied it. This is not people that just, you know, shoot from the lip and say, oh, well, it just has to be a deformity because we don't allow it to be anything else. We don't acknowledge that it could be anything else, so ipso facto, it has to be what we think it is. Instead of the few out there, couple dozen maybe, who have really taken it seriously and gone into it, and when you actually research it, what you find very quickly is that no, is that there's no human deformity like the Star Child, and not only that, there's no combination of human deformities that can produce something so very different that would live. I mean, there is not a single physiological corollary in the Star Child and a human, you know, normal human being. You just can't find, you can't name a part of a human skull and then look at the Star Child and find something that is similar, where you say, oh, well, look, that's a human part there. You know, you can say, well, okay, it's got two holes in the side of its head for its ear holes. Well, yeah, it does have that, but we don't know what the ears were like. But there are holes there, but inside those holes are inner ears that are twice as big. So you can't really say it's the same as a human ear. It's just an ear hole, but they're not in the same place. They don't have the same, you know, it's just not the same. So,
yeah.
You see what I mean?
Uh-huh. Now, what's this this reddish residue that was on the skull, and is there any theory?
Well, it wasn't on the skull. It was
what?
In the cancellous holes,
okay.
And that's the same place where the general area of the fibers. The fibers were more buried in the matrix of the bone, and the residue, we like the fibers, we don't know what it was, we don't know what it is.
Yeah.
The problem is I have to operate on an absolute complete shoestring. It's a very difficult life for me because anytime I try to get I would ask for any financial help, as soon as that happens, critics say, oh, well, you can't believe anything he says because he's just in this to milk it for the money. So, you know, it makes it very difficult. That's how they keep me from getting money to get things done. So one of the things I couldn't do, which I would have liked to have done, would be to test both the fibers and the residue. But in looking into that and what it would cost, one of the problems is because both of those things are completely unknown to science, there are no tools for recovering microscopic-sized objects like that. I mean, this is not to say that there are not microscopic tools. I mean, you can put a sperm in an egg. They can be done, but you have to know what you're doing. You have to make a tool specifically for the job, and there are none for that job. So we would have had to pay for the development of the protocol, the recovery protocols, and then pay for the tests of things that you don't have any idea what they are. So you'd have to run a very wide and broad battery of tests on these things to try to figure out what they are. This is not to say any of this can't be done. It can be done, but not until somebody's willing to throw a lot of money at it to do it. And even if we had done that, here's the key to it, even if we had done that, even if we proved that those fibers and that residue were completely bizarre, it wouldn't matter to science. Science would still say, well, it's still natural. Mother Nature did that somehow because nature can do that.
Mm-hmm.
Nature can do anything in terms of making deformities.
Yeah.
So by the end of my first year at this, and by the end of 99, I knew that it really just came down to the DNA, that no scientist was going to listen to, no matter how many of these physiological differences I stacked up, all they kept saying was, nature can do that, nature can do that, nature can do that too. Nature can do anything you throw at it. Nature, we can say to you, nature did it. So you're not going to win on these physiological differences. You're only going to win with DNA. So I've had to wait basically 10 years until there was a test that I could that could do the job and that we could pay for.
And
when I say pay for, let me qualify that. It's within reach. It's $250,000, and that's, you know, certainly vastly beyond my own personal reach, but there are people out there who blow $250,000 in Las Vegas or Monaco on a bad weekend and don't worry about it. You know,
yeah,
they just move on. So there are people who are just so stinking rich that $250,000 is just nothing. So that's the kind of person that we have to find, somebody that just has an awful lot of money and who wants to know the answer to this great mystery. And when we find that, we'll get it done.
So let's talk about the DNA testing that has been done.
All right. Well, there have been two tests up to now. The first test was done at the end of 99, and it was done at a forensic lab because we couldn't get any of the six labs that were capable at that time of handling ancient DNA, which was DNA beyond the age of 50 years. And that lab, though it was not equipped properly to handle the Starchild skull, they tried it anyway, and they ended up making a mistake. They didn't realize they had made a mistake. They thought they had a proper result, which was a human male. But I knew it was wrong. I knew it had to be wrong because physiologically the star child is not human. It's just simply not, it's not even close to human. It is just not human. So if you look at the physiology of it, each of those differences, those two dozen major differences and those couple dozen other minor, smaller differences, all of those differences are the result of different genes giving different instructions to this being to grow in a different way. That being the case, there had to be, it just couldn't be human the way this first lab said it was. So in 2003, 3 years later, well, late 99, middle, 3.5 years later, let's say, we were able to get another DNA test, this time at a lab dedicated to ancient DNA that could handle it. And they didn't make a mistake. And so what the result that they got was that the mother of the star child is clearly human and the father is not, because they could not recover the mitochondrial DNA very easily, first attempt, which comes from your mother. But the nuclear DNA, which comes from your mother and your father, in six attempts, they couldn't recover it. So what that meant was the father was screwing up the result. The father was keeping the primers from recovering it. So that meant the father, it wasn't human. But what we couldn't determine in 2003, the reason we couldn't say for sure that it was an alien, the father was an alien, just that he wasn't entirely human, but it could have been, and what science argued was, well, it could be just that he's just a fraction, just a tiny little bit off of being human, just enough to where Mother Nature could account for it. Nature could account for a human being that was so different, it didn't quite register with the primers, but it was still clearly a human being. That was the argument. And, you know, they said you have to be much farther away and prove it. And at the time, we couldn't do it. But then in 2006, a test came online that allows the recovery of the whole genome, base pair by base pair. That is the test that we need to apply to the star child, and that will give us the entire genome that we can line up against the human genome, the chimp genome, the gorilla genome, and find out where the star child falls. Now, you and me and everybody else listening to me, we are all within 99.99% of each other. We're almost clones, human beings. For as different as we are, we're incredibly alike.
Mm-hmm.
When you keep in mind that a chimp is 3% different from us, and a gorilla is 5% different from us, you see that 99.99% is not it makes sense, you see.
Yeah.
So the star child doesn't have to be far away to be not really, really not human, like a half a percent. If the star child was 99.5, that's not human. If the star child was 99, one full percent, clearly not human. If the star child was, you know, 97%, it's equal to a chimp in terms of difference. If it's 95%, it's equal to a gorilla. You see what I'm saying? So it's just to where it falls in there that's going to determine how easy it is to say that it's an alien. I think, personally, based on the so many physiological differences just in the skull, and if you extrapolate that down through the whole body and the organs of the body and all of that, I think it's going to be out by the gorilla or more. I mean, it can be anywhere, but it isn't going to be 99.99, I can assure you of that. The star child is going to be an alien.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of getting that test and laying that genome down against a human. But we are holding the smoking gun of UFO and alien research, and we are on the verge of making history as big as history can be made. It's just a matter of time now. It will happen.
Can't wait for it to happen.
Well,
that'll definitely be a big break. That's
why I come on shows like yours, to get the word out to the people who are listening, to try to get them to, you know, purchase the e-book and make themselves aware of these facts, and then spread the word to their friends and colleagues, and eventually the right person's going to hear about it.
Okay, now, can you give us a few names of the books that are out there that people can search for to buy?
Well, there really, in terms of the Star Child, there are only two.
Okay.
There's the e-book, which is the easy way to go about it. It would take an average person about an hour to go through that, but at the end of that hour, they would be as knowledgeable as anybody anywhere about all of the key facts about it. Now, that can be obtained through the Star Child Project website, www.starchildproject.com. Very easy, Star Child Project, or just, you know, Google Star Child, you'll get there, Star Child,
yeah,
Project. And you scroll down to the bottom of the home page, and you'll see, you know, click here for the ebook. It's called The Star Child Skull Essentials, and there's an 8-page free sample, and you go to that, and then if you like what you see, you get the book and absorb it. Now, there's another book, a real book called The Star Child Skull. And that's the background. What the e-book is it's just the facts. It's just, here's what makes the Star Child incredible. Boom, 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 right down like that. The book, which is called The Star Child Skull, the real book, that tells you the background stories of how everything came to be, how it unfolded, how each test unfolded, how we learned step by step by step by step that this thing is, you know, is not human. And it was just the adventure of it, that first year, and then the ups and the downs and the disappointments and the successes. And we've had some really, really high points with this thing and some really, really low points. So there's a lot of drama in there. And you meet the people. You get to know the people involved. It's a regular book. So that's called The Star Child Skull. And that's available through Amazon.com, or if you're not in the U.S., Amazon.co.uk, but you get it through Amazon nowhere else.
And I wish I would have known, because I could have put it up here on the show page.
Well, that's okay. I mean,
yeah,
people, you can do it. I mean, it's not hard to do that.
Yeah.
But
plus, you'll have a link on my show site forever. Every guest that comes on my show gets a link forever. So.
Great. Okay. Well, those are the two links for those two books relative to the Star Child.
Yeah, I have to say the site, thestarchildproject.com, you know, everything's there you need to know about it. Now, is this the what is the 454 life sciences? What do they have to do?
That the new test, the one that recovers the whole genome, that's the company. Remember I said in 2006 there was a breakthrough? That's the company that caused the breakthrough. The 454 Life Sciences developed the technique for recovering an entire genome base pair by base pair. And keep in mind that in a genome, you have approximately 3 billion in a human, in a chimp, and a gorilla, approximately 3 billion. It's an awful lot. It's just an awful lot. But once you have it, you have just the whole biological package of that species. So it's something that's it's wonderful technology, and it's wonderful knowledge to have. And we will have that one day with the Star Child.
Now, was this when this skull was originally found? Is it true that it was found during or after a flood?
It was found just before. The girl that found it, she found two skeletons, two full skeletons, and she recovered the two skulls by trying to recover the two skeletons at first. But she had been told not to go where she did to find them, and so she wanted some time to think about how to get them hidden to sneak them back into the state. She found them in Mexico, and about 100 miles southwest of Chihuahua around the Copper Canyon area. So it's kind of high deserty, and when her and her family went there, the kids were told, she was a kid then, about 14 or 15, the kids were told not to go in the caves of the mine tunnels in the area because it was dangerous, and so she snuck off and she did that. And that's when she found the two skeletons, put them in a basket, tried to hide them under the roots of a tree at the edge of an arroyo without thinking why those roots would be exposed. And so that night it just so happened that a very torrential rain came that lasted 2 days, filled the arroyo and with floodwaters, and all of the bones got washed away from her hiding place. So when she went downstream looking for anything she could find, she found the two skulls snagged in bushes downstream and a piece of maxilla, and so that's all she recovered, the two skulls and the detached piece of maxilla. And the skulls had been damaged in that tumble down the arroyo. The Star Child actually more than the human one. And so that was it. She took them back to the States and just put them in a box and kept them as souvenirs her whole life until she died in the early 90s. And that was about at 1930, by the way. She found them in about 1930. So for 60-some-odd years after finding them, she just kept them, thinking that the Star Child was what anyone would think at that time, a human deformity. There was no such thing as UFOs or aliens in 1930. She just assumed it was a human deformity.
We have a listener question, but I think we pretty much answered it. She said, were the skeletons found beside each other or near each other?
Yes. I haven't answered it, actually. There was a human, clearly a human, no question, lying on its back on the dirt of the mine tunnel. And this is some distance in, but the girl could still see reasonably clearly. So let's say 50 feet, 50 to 100 feet. So somewhere in that range, she sees a skeleton, human skeleton, lying on its back beside a mound of dirt. And that mound of dirt, emerging from it, was a skeletal hand. And that skeletal hand emerging from the dirt was wrapped around the upper arm bone of the human lying on its back. So it's clear that the human, that the Star Child skeleton, the one in the dirt, died first because the human buried it in a shallow grave there and left the hand sticking out deliberately, and then she herself laid down and wrapped its hand around her arm, and then she killed herself. She committed suicide in some way. So it's a pretty dramatic story how the girl said she found the bones, you know, found the skeletons lying together. But, you know, that we pretty much have to take her word for it, because we know that they both died 900 years ago, plus or minus 40 years, according to carbon-14 testing of both skeletons at different places at different times. So that's very, very unusual correlation.
Yeah.
So we do accept fully her story as it was told.
Wow. Now, another listener question. They want to know, I think this was covered on the UFO Hunters episode, but how big is the brain capacity difference between the Star Child skull and a normal human skull?
All right, I'm sorry, can you say that again?
They want to know how big is the brain capacity, like how big, you know, the brain would be in the Star Child skull.
Oh, okay, it's very different. The two skulls are the same size. Physically, they are the same size. They would fit in about a 13 cubic centimeter cube. So they're about the size of a very small adult or about the average 12-year-old. They're a little bit smaller than normal. So the normal human skull, your skull, my skull, would be about 1,400 cubic centimeters. The human one that was found has a capacity of about 1,200 cubic centimeters. So that's about right for a 12-year-old or a very small person.
Yeah.
The Star Child should have 1,200 cubic centimeters as well.
Uh-huh.
However, it has 1,600 cubic centimeters.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's one-third as big.
And seeing that we only use one-tenth of our brain, if they used one-tenth of their brain, it just, it's, you know, the possibilities are out there. Let's see here. We got now.
Well, it's, you know, just as long as we're talking about the brain, not only does it have a lot more brain in there than we can really account for. You know, obviously the bone is smaller, you know, thinner, so it gives a little more room for brain. You know, the eye sockets are very shallow. That gives more room for brain. There are no sinuses, no frontal sinuses, so that gives room for more brain. But it just isn't enough. It isn't enough to account for what, you know, the extra fully one-third of it. But on top of that, the actual material of the brain itself is very different because the design of the head, if you go on the Star Child and on the Star Child website and you look at the pictures and you see the rear of the head and you see the sharp angle of the rear of the head, it has no curve down around the base of the skull like we have, where our cerebellum sits. Our cerebellum rests in the curve at the rear of our heads, and it's protected by our thick neck muscles, which attach at the inion, which is that knot that we all have at the back middle rear of our head. Well, if you look at the Star Child, it has no inion. Its neck is attached way further down than that. So it has a very odd, steep rear angle of all that brain weight, and you have all that extra amount in the upper expanded parietal. So you have all this extra weight pressing right down, straight down, right out of the foramen magnum, which is the neck hole. I mean, right out of the hole. A being like that born as an infant, the bones are so soft that the weight of that brain would have pushed right out of the foramen magnum and killed it. Should have, anyway. So when a brain specialist was for the first one who really explained this to me, he said, look, this brain should have just slid right out of this skull. There's nothing to stop it from just shooting right down. It's like a heavy kid going down a slipper slide. Should have just been right out. But he says, look, there's no distension of it at all. There's no distension of the foramen magnum at all. It looks perfectly normal. So he said, this brain either doesn't have a cerebellum like we have, or it is not brain like we have brain, because a human brain would have gone out that hole at shaped like this. But he said, this thing obviously lived. It became an adult, so I have to think it doesn't have a brain the way we have. Now, that's pretty interesting as well.
Yeah. I mean, because Yeah, because our cerebellum is small, which prevents it. So if it don't have a cerebellum, it would slip right
out. Well,
a
cerebellum's about the size of, a ball. No, it's bigger than that. So it's more like a baseball to a softball in that size. It's about 1/10 of the whole capacity of our brain. But it has 80% of the neurons, so it is us. It is our software. All of the top part of our brain is where we think, but the cerebellum is what runs our motors. It runs our breathing, our heartbeat, our bowels, our bladder. All of that. Everything that's being done where we're not aware of it, but going on 24/7. That's the cerebellum.
Okay.
So it's a very important part of our brain. It's why it's so protected and ensconced where it is, so you can't have anything go wrong with that and hope to live. And the Star Childs should have been pushed out through its foramen magnum and killed it, and didn't. So, you figure it out. We don't know how to.
Yeah, and we have some more listener questions. There's some theories and some. People in the UFO community that talk about star children that are actually ETs that are still living to this day.
Right.
Do you or have you researched into that at all? Or do you?
Yeah, well, obviously people are going to send me anything to do with things like that. But what I tell them and what I tell you and what I tell your audience is that if there are Star Children, they're not like the Star Child, because the Star Child would have looked totally bizarre. I mean, just totally bizarre in life. So the Star Children that people tell me they have or that they know about are indistinguishable from normal humans. So I don't know how they make that judgment that someone is a Star Child, because they're certainly not a Star Child like the Star Child skull. The Star Child skull, to my knowledge, is one of a kind, just absolutely unique.
Yeah, okay. Well, let's see.
And by the way, something to mention for people who are new to this field, who are just hearing about it for the first time, one of the things they're going to do, they always do, is they go out and they start looking on the Internet for information about it. And they'll find Wikipedia, and they'll find different articles that will say that the Star Child is just human and don't worry about it. And these are things written back in 1999 when we were still just learning and kind of feeling our way and, frankly, making mistakes, like the business about calling it the Star Child when it really wasn't a child and all that. But I always was very upfront about wherever we were at any particular time when I was giving reports. I would always tell the truth about, well, here's what we know to this point, we think. And sometimes that would get changed. So out of 10 years of work, we have a very clear picture of it up to this point. And yet Wikipedia and these other critics and stuff like that, they don't account for anything that's changed. They stick with the old bad information because it suits their purposes. And it's the same thing with Wikipedia. I just want to let everybody know that in the field of alternative knowledge, and I don't care who you are and I don't care what you do, if you are alternative from the mainstream, Wikipedia is going to hack you up and make you sound like a bozo, just like TV does. You know how mainstream television tends to make UFOs and everything look silly. That's what Wikipedia is bound to do. They are a voice of the mainstream. They are a tool of the mainstream. They are not friends of the alternative community, and Wikipedia is not in it for the truth. And I'll tell you a great line. This comes from the head of Wikipedia himself that I talked to when I was trying to get my own personal bio on Wikipedia changed and trying to get the Star Child description changed. And he said, Mr. Pye, you're the last person in the world that I would expect to tell the truth. But he said, more than that, Wikipedia is not in the business of worrying about the truth. Wikipedia is there to support the consensus of scientific opinion at any particular time, meaning what science has decided is the truth. That's what is Wikipedia's truth. They're not after and they're not concerned with seeking absolute truth. So they're useless in terms of the alternative knowledge. They're good for, you know, for science, as far as I know, for pure science, for facts like that. But anytime you wander off the mainstream path and you become alternative, they're, you know, Wikipedia is run by graduate students for the most part. They do most of the writing of those articles that you read, just graduate students around the world. And they are very protective of the system that they're buying into, and so they will hammer you, and they do.
Yeah, I had a good friend, Terrell Copeland, who was also on UFO Hunters Alien Contact episode. He went on ABC on a UFO program, and they told his story and Stan Romanek's story. I'm sure you've seen that show because, well, I don't know if you've seen it or not. But anyway, they ended up editing the material to make it look like he was just dreaming all of this stuff and everything he said was, you know, just dreams.
Yeah, well, it's the deal you make with the devil to get on television, to get your thing publicized. You know, going in, they'll tell you going in, we pretty much have to screw you because we can't have people go to bed thinking what you're saying is true because it would be upsetting to them. So we let you have your say, but then we have to have some expert come on and say to people, oh, yeah, yuck, 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 but don't believe them because they're all wrong. So he said, great line, we're in the business to titillate, not to scare. And, you know, they're in the business to get people excited, but not to scare them. So there you go.
How long have the current owners owned the skull?
Since 98, since the middle of 98. Yeah.
Okay. Let's see if we have any callers. Now, I know there's been tons of tests done on this, different types of tests done on the skull. What's the last test you guys performed on it?
Oh, let's see. The last test was probably the forensic pathology where we were working on trying to determine what its biochemistry was, and that's when we found the fibers and the residue. And when we found out, you know, the costs of that were prohibitive, we just pretty much just let it go. Because really, again, I have to explain, we know what it is. We know it's alien from 2003, we've known that. We also know that no matter what we prove of a physiological nature, it's irrelevant to science. Science just doesn't care. They say, one guy said to me, I don't care if you stack up 10,000 differences, I can still say to you, nature can do it, because nature can do anything. So there is no point in doing anything but the DNA. Once we have the DNA, then we can force science to treat it like Otzi, the Iceman under the Alps. They've spent like $25 million and done every kind of test imaginable on that guy.
Yep.
Well, that's how they'll treat the star child when it's okay for them to do it, when they no longer have to be afraid of it, and everybody just accepts what it is, accepts that it's alien, and then it's going to be, well, okay, let's find out what it can tell us, and then it'll be Otzi all over again, but probably to a higher power.
Yep. Now, for all listeners, you can do your part if you can. You can donate on the StarChildProject.com site. I'm looking at the artist renderings of the Star Child skull on the website, and I gotta say, it's amazing.
They've got some really very creative ones there, don't they?
Oh wow, it's incredible.
Yeah, but what it shows you, though, is how much artistic interpretation goes into it as well. But just like the thing on the UFO hunters.
Yeah.
You know, that that sculpture that was made. I told them before they paid their money, I said, look, I'm telling you what's going to happen is it's going to come out with a human face under a big head because they're not going to have anything to work with except human human outlines, you know, human templates is the word I was looking for. Human templates, that's all they're going to have to work with, so they can't do anything but create a human-like face unless I'm sitting over there, you know, standing over their shoulder, kind of guiding them along. And they said, well, we can't afford to do that, but we'll take our shot and hope for the best. So I said, okay. So they did that, and it came out with the face, really, to me, it looks like Lee Harvey Oswald. You know, if you look at the sculpture, that's what it looks like. So it just is a function of the interpretation of the artist, because it's extremely hard to build a face when you've got so many different aspects to the skull.
Yeah.
And also, too, when you've got so much of the lower face missing, so it becomes having to make your best guess and figure out based on very, very flimsy evidence at the root of the base of everything that has to do with the face, but the actual face itself is just not there. So you have to build everything going down into it as right as you can, and then let that just kind of flow down. But I think it's going to, I'm really sure that the Star Child's lower face would have been very small, like the face of gray aliens are supposed to be. I you know, when you look at the what's left, it, you know, the small chewing muscles, the small zygomatic arches, the small throw of the zygomatic arches, it looks in every way like a very, very small lower face. And also the size of the piece of upper maxilla, it's the size of an infant. I mean, literally the size of an infant, 1 inch long. Very small, flat roof of a mouth, so we just no arch at all in the roof of the mouth, so we don't even know the size of the tongue that it had, or if it even had a tongue. It because it had such a small neck, it had a neck half the size of a normal human neck, and it has such a small mouth and perhaps no tongue, and it's got this giant head, brain, you know, giant brain, relatively speaking. It could well be that this thing was designed to communicate without speaking, just communicate telepathically. And that's what they say grays do. And I firmly believe that this thing, though it's a hybrid, though it had a human mother, it's much, much more like its father than like its mother, because there's really nothing left of its mother in it except her mitochondrial DNA. So I don't believe that the Star Child is the result of a sexual union. I believe it's the result of genetic engineering and an in vitro birth, you know, in vitro fertilization and birth, and that the mother that carried it was a human being because her mitochondrial DNA was left. But most of its traits come from its father, and that is possible. It's possible to do that with genetic engineering. You can make a hybrid that is 90% one sex and 10% the other.
Yeah.
Or 95% one sex and 5% the other. I mean, whatever you want to do, you can do if you know what you're doing genetically.
Okay, I'm going to welcome my good friend and fellow co-host on some shows for the last 10 minutes. I'm going to welcome him on. Jackal, you here?
Thank you. Thank you for that, Jamie. I appreciate it. And Mr. Pye, I'm a big fan of the Star Child book that you wrote. It's interesting, an interesting concept. It's been a great show, by the way, guys.
Well, thank you.
Do you have any questions for Mr. Pye at all, Jackal?
Yeah, actually, he kind of hit it on the head. I was about to ask him about the gray alien connection a little bit further, but he kind of like answered the question before I even got to it. It's funny, as soon as I heard about the whole Star Child thing, the first thing that popped into my head was the fact that this might be connected to the grays and the gray aliens everybody's seen. My question really would be, you know, how old do you think the child was at the time of death, if this is a child's skull? and what might have happened.
Well,
to
we said that earlier. You're coming into the show late, obviously.
Yeah.
It wasn't a child. It was an adult when it died. We mistakenly thought it was a child in the beginning, but later found out that it was clearly an adult.
Okay, yeah, I missed that part of the show. It was actually
Now, have you guys done any? Have you guys tried any tests to try to determine the height of this?
There's no way to do a test because the skull, if you looked at the skull and if you went by that size, you would think it was about 5 feet tall.
Yeah.
But because the other skull is from a being about 5 feet tall, which for Mexicans of today is not unusual, and certainly it wouldn't be unusual 900 years ago. So the girl who found the skeletons said that the one in the ground, the weird one, the strange one, was noticeably smaller than the other one. So if the human one was 5 feet tall, we assume noticeably smaller would put it in the range of 4 feet, which is pretty standard for a gray in that range.
For the grays right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people that say they've had contact with grays say that their mouth is not a mouth. It's almost like a filmy
cover.
Like a
slit.
Yeah. Like that, they don't talk. They use telepathy.
Telepathy. I think it's very likely that the Star Child could have had that capacity. I can't swear to it, but if you add up the very small neck, the very small mouth, and the very big brain, then there really wouldn't be necessarily room in that neck for a voice box and all the mechanism that goes with speaking. And particularly if there's not much of a tongue or no tongue at all, that's another sign. And then that huge brain of a different kind of material than a human brain, you put all that together, and that, to me, says a very high likelihood of telepathy.
Wow.
One question I have for you, Mr. Pye. Now, since, you know, you did say the child, or wasn't a child, was an adult, is there a possibility that it might have actually produced offsprings itself?
Well, certainly there would be a possibility of that, but it would be a male. Excuse me, sorry. We don't know what its sex was.
Okay. Right.
So we wouldn't know, you know, until we know that, we wouldn't be able to speculate, you know, one way or the other. If it's an adult, you have to assume so. Either sex, I guess.
Right.
Well, we got a couple minutes left. It's been a great pleasure and an honor having you on the show, Mr. Pye.
Well, it's been really nice to be on with you, and maybe we could give the websites again in case anybody wants to write them down. The website for the Star Child Project is just that, starchildproject, all one word, .com. And if you go there, there's, as we said earlier, there's a lot of information there. But also, if you scroll down the homepage, you can go to the ebook, and there is an 8-page sample there you should be able to download and see if you like the look of that. I would really urge and recommend everybody to do it that can hear me, because that's the easy way to absorb the most amount of information that counts, the facts that make it special, and that if you do that, it makes you automatically the smartest person in the room. If the conversation should turn to UFOs and aliens, you will have some firepower to argue the case. If you want the book, if you want more information, or let's just say that you read the ebook and you're excited and you like what you read and you want to know how did these facts come to be, how did we find these things out, that's what's explained in the book itself. And the ebook is called Star Child Skull Essentials, and the book about it is called The Star Child Skull. And that you can only get through Amazon, Amazon.com, or if you're not in the country, Amazon.co.uk. And have fun. It's a great subject. It's a fabulous story. Very interesting. Very exciting. Anybody that's read it can tell you. And I've got thousands of emails to that effect, like, oh, wow, what an incredible story. And it is. It just is. But the ebook doesn't have the story. It's just got the facts. And I recommend that as a good starting point, and then you make the decision about whether you want to go from the book for the book from there.
Yeah, it's a fascinating subject.
Listen, I really believe, honestly, I don't think I'm leading anyone astray on this. It is the most important thing going on in the world right now that almost nobody, that relatively few people know about. It is really, really important, and we're just not, have not been able yet to break it out into the mainstream, because it's the kind of thing that the mainstream has to pretty much avoid in order not to aggravate science, and science just doesn't want to deal with this issue because it opens up so many cans of worms that they just don't want to have to deal with.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Well,
it's amazing what science suppresses, just, you know, out of pure ignorance.
Oh, tons of it. Just tons
of
it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Tons of it, yeah. They just had a wonderful documentary on Nova tonight about Charles Darwin's Darkest Hour, it's called, and it's about him, the enormous amount of pressure that he was under in the 1850s. Everybody, absolutely everybody in his world believed the story of the Bible implicitly, just implicitly. There was no option. And here's this one guy saying, wait a minute, that could all be wrong. Can you imagine? And there's really not a lot different, really not a lot different today in what those of us in the field of alternative knowledge are trying to do, and what I'm trying to do specifically with the Star Child, which is to say to science and, you know, government and religion, all the millions of you are wrong. Just not just wrong, big, bad, laughably, howlingly wrong. And so it's the equivalent of what Darwin was trying to do in his time and was doing. And, of course, I'm not doing it with nearly the effectiveness of Darwin, but I can. If I can get the money to do the DNA test and we prove it, then it's the same effect that Darwin will have had. It will make history as big as history can be made.
Yeah, that's the clincher right there. If you can get the DNA test, that'll be the clincher for
it. Yeah, it's just really a matter of time. Sooner or later, if I can just keep putting the word out, and if I can keep connecting with people who know people who know people, sooner or later, Larry King, somebody that knows Larry King is going to hear about it, somebody that knows Ellen DeGeneres, somebody that knows Oprah, you know, something like that's going to happen. We'll get some mainstream major exposure. Then somebody with money will hear about it, or, you know, somehow or other it's going to happen. The ball is in play, but we just have to be patient and wait our turn.
Okay, well, we have 1 minute left. It's been a pleasure having you on. I'm going to permanently link you here and link you on my main website and try to get as much information passed your way. Now, to all listeners, if you're interested in anything about this, go to the site. You can even contact him. That's how I contacted him.
Right, Lloyd@LloydPie.com. That's my email address. I'm easy to find, Lloyd@LloydPie, L-L-O-Y-D, L-L-O-Y-D, P as in Paul, Y-E.com.
All right, well, it's been great having you. Have a good
Thank
night.
Thank you, Jamie. It's been nice. It's been nice being on with you. Keep doing what you're doing, keep spreading the good word, and we'll keep our fingers crossed for both of us.
We'll
and for me, it's a pleasure to be on the phone with you too, Mr. Pye.
All right, thank you very much, and you guys have a good evening.
You too.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye. All right, Jackal, that wraps up a very good episode.
That was fun, yeah. He's a very knowledgeable man.
Yeah, and it's very true what he's saying. You know, this could be the break.
Yeah. Now, if you can get that DNA done, that approves, I mean, his point right there, if it is or not.
Yeah. That's got to be something that I'm going to start pushing for, trying to get more traffic to his site and trying to get the word out about this, because there's no reason that they should not have the funds to go on with the DNA testing needed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if Maury can have DNA tested on his show, you know, for parental reasons, I'm sure this, you know, it's not a big issue, really. it just, you know, it's the funds should be there. I mean, this is an important project.
Yeah. Well, everyone, I want to announce before the show is over, I am having the Nick Pope on tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Eastern.
Awesome.
I have to do that because he's in the UK and he's 6 hours ahead of us. So if possible, it's going to be a great show. I have tons of great questions lined up for him. It's 10 a.m. It's going to be here on this site. And I hope you tune in. If you're not and you miss it, you can always come here and download it. Jackal, I'll talk to you after the show. Good night, everyone.
Same to you, my friend. Good night, everybody.
Bye.
Perhaps we need some outside universal threat. I occasionally think how quickly our differences...